Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Paranormal Investigator Radio. We are your hosts for the evening. My name is Dr. Dave DeProspero.
And I am Peter Leonard.
And tonight we have a special guest, Vince Perillo. Hi, Vince.
How you doing?
Thank you for joining us tonight. We are down Rich tonight. He's out on assignment.
He's partying in Arizona right now at Lucky SOB.
A little bit better weather than we have up here in Central New York, but...
Oh my God, has it been 2 weeks already?
It's been 2 weeks, and a lot has happened, and we have a lot to talk about. In fact, we're going to go over a few of the things that we're going to talk about in just a second.
Yeah, we feel kind of lonely. You can call us, ask us questions, bust their chops. We're easy going here.
Please call in. We love to hear from everybody.
Skype is also an option. If you want to Skype call in, it's at BBS Radio number 2. No number sign notes. BBS Radio 2.
BBS Radio 2. So guys, we have some interesting news. In the mainstream paranormal field, we've got a couple interesting things we're going to talk about tonight. Bigfoot killed in Pennsylvania.
Yes, then some UFO stuff.
Yeah, we have a new book coming out, so we're going to talk about some UFO topics.
Some of the ghost crap.
Yeah, a little bit of ghost stuff here and there. Vince told us today that somebody is actually selling part of the Dead Sea Scrolls, so we'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I read that. How can you possibly put a price on that?
With eBay, you can put a price on anything.
And then... Pete just mentioned a few minutes ago that there's some Catholic exorcism news that hit mainstream, so we're going to go over some of that, too.
Earth-shattering.
It's crazy. And let's see, for tech, we're going to talk about a pretty touchy subject tonight, cell phones and paranormal investigating. Two things that are typically no-nos together, but we'll go over that nonetheless. And we also have to talk about, of course, our big event coming up in a little less than 30 days, the Hulbert House with John Zaffis.
Oh, who cares? No.
No.
It's going to be the event of June that we're hosting.
That's right. It should be a very good event.
We should point out that since we have Vince on the air with us tonight, he will be DJing the RIP Party of the Century at the Hulbert House.
That's right. We'll leave some of that for Vince to tell you all about.
All classical music all night long. Really well with the country music crowd.
Possibly a bit of swing, too.
A bit of swing music?
Oh, dear.
Vienna in the 1700s, is that the theme for the evening?
So I should bust out the zoot suit and get a mohawk. Let's talk about that weirdness with Bigfoot. They killed him in Pennsylvania? Does he know that? Because they still see him around the world.
Who found that one?
That was a weird thing on the internet that this gentleman, I believe he worked for the Department of Conservation.
Oh, boy.
And the ironic thing was he called up 911 and told them that he needed a police officer to come to his house because he had some information on the whereabouts of Bigfoot.
Hmm.
Can you imagine being on the recipient end of that phone call? 911 emergency, how can I help you?
Help! I have Bigfoot!
Does he really have a big foot? Is the rest of them big, or is it just one foot? He could be a really small guy with just big feet.
You kind of have to wonder how somebody would logically answer that phone call.
But with the article there, they showed pictures of the casts of his feet. And being in New York, I mean, there's a lot of sightings of Bigfoot. There's a lot of sightings of the big cats. If you go to Walmart on Tuesday nights, Lord knows what kind of big things you'll see there.
That's always a cryptozoological show for the masses.
I mean, I know you always joke around that you can't buy paranormal stuff at Walmart.
That's right.
They sure do have enough paranormal
happening. You can see some stuff there, though. Yeah, I'm looking at this article right now, and this version doesn't have the pictures, but I could imagine that the casts are pretty substantial.
It's a lot of money in plaster of Paris. And what do you do with that afterwards? You put that on a bookshelf?
I think they have a museum somewhere of Yeti and Bigfoot footprints.
No, no, see, Yetis are real, because I seen that on Destination Truth with Josh Gates. They have its head in a cube in some place that was up in the mountains.
That's true. The Tibetans have the head and the fur and hands and feet.
But all joking aside, I mean, I've said it 100 times, it all goes hand in hand. Every time they see Bigfoot in New York, there seems to be a spike in UFO activity.
That's true. That's true. Eric, Vince, you want to weigh in on the UFO end of that?
He has two names. Ever since he was abducted by aliens when he was young, he's gone by the name Eric. But, most recently, he's become Vince again.
Yeah, I feel much safer going by Vince. Eric brings it back to some scary times.
And
yeah, throughout the world, there has been an occurrence of a Bigfoot being sighted. And then 2 or 3 days later, somebody either sees a UFO or vice versa. It hasn't been confirmed yet that Bigfoot's alien, but there's definitely a possibility.
I mean, again, all joking aside, with something that big, with that much hair, how do you shave?
Pete, maybe you can answer that. How do you shave?
Hey, just because I won a Robin Williams lookalike contest one time doesn't mean anything.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, you know, I did actually read an article quite a while ago, a few months back, about the possibility that Bigfoot is actually an extraterrestrial being, and that would account for the rarity of the sightings and, you know, all that stuff. Okay, wait, I'm being shown a computer screen here, which confirms by Fox News that 2,000 years after they were written and decades after they were found in desert caves, some of the world-famous Dead Sea Scrolls are now up for sale.
Do you know why they called it the Dead Sea?
Why?
I don't know. That's what I was asking you.
Oh.
No, I believe it's due to the high salt content.
That is amazing. I mean, this is antiquity right here to the extreme.
You know what's going to end up happening. Someone's going to buy that, they're going to cut it into 1-inch cubes and start selling it in trading cards and offering it for sale, and we're going to lose all that history.
It says, the Ten Commandments, written on one of the Dead Sea Scrolls in Jerusalem, nearly 70 years after the discovery of the world's oldest biblical manuscripts, the Palestinian family who originally sold them to scholars and institutions is now quietly marketing the leftovers. Fragments, the family says, it has kept in a Swiss safe deposit box all these years.
After hearing that, all I can think of is our own Mike Perillo. Where's the treasure in Oak Island?
Oh, gosh. Mike would go crazy over this one.
Start saving your money, Nico.
We should point out that we're a group of cousins, too. I don't know if we ever said that. David and I are cousins.
Right.
Eric, Vince, and Mike are cousins. Steve and Raven are cousins.
Yep.
And Rich is Rich.
Rich is kind of the redheaded stepchild, but we keep him anyway. All right, so what do we think about this?
They're confirming 10 commandments, not 15 or 11 and a half.
No.
They're confirming 10.
It said the fragment in this photo right here has the original 10, well, not the original, but has the 10 commandments written on this particular fragment.
And that's Fox News, so we can believe at least half of what's there.
Right, right.
So the picture's real.
The picture's real. I wonder what... I wonder where this is going to be sold through, what organization is going to be handling its sale.
Yeah, like I said, I got $20 for eBay. I'll be a bidder in the first 2 or 3 seconds.
Jeez.
Not my first, I probably looked at a haunted museum there.
Boy, look at, if any of you at home are able to go to Google and type in fragments of Dead Sea Scrolls up for sale. I mean, they have some photos on here. And these photos are showing these little paper fragments that are thousands of years old. It said that most of the scraps are barely postage stamp size. And some are blank. There's a kicker right there.
It's left to the imagination.
Boy. Yeah, so we're reading this right now, and...
Actually, that might be my $20 right there, a little piece of blank paper.
They were discovered in 1947. It does not say who is selling them. Well, the family's selling them. It doesn't say what organization is selling them.
I mean, you have to wonder if something like that in itself was divine. I mean, of all the caves and all the places that's in that desert, you happen upon the one that had all of those scrolls and jars.
It said it is likely that more ancient manuscripts and even more Dead Sea Scrolls remain hidden in caves next to the Dead Sea, the lowest point on Earth waiting to be discovered. Many cave entrances are hidden by vegetation and rockfalls, or their approaches are eroded. That comes from a Jerusalem manuscripts dealer, but that's amazing.
And did you ever see how they lay them out and they put them things back together with tweezers?
Yeah.
I mean, I have the patience of a saint, but I don't even think I could do that.
Jeepers.
What are you doing here with the sneeze?
They said that about 5 years ago, a very, very small piece was put up for sale in the hopes that the buyer would donate it to the country of Israel. But the $1.2 million asking price was too high for that small fragment. That's crazy.
Is that a dollar or a shekel?
That's U.S. dollars. Wow. Yeah, that's a definitely unique one.
Going to have to brush up on my... Did it say the language they're in? Is it Greek, or is that actually in...
No, I don't know.
It's not Sumerian, Benny. We see you smiling over there.
No Aramaic.
No, but many believe that Jesus lived in the community where those were written.
I would attempt to say what it's called, but it's
Qumran. The Qumran community, something to that effect.
It's in the desert.
The desert?
It's in some type of Hebrew, though.
Hebrew? Yeah, a variant of Hebrew. Mm.
Again, give us a call in. We'd love to hear from you. I mean, we're here to bust our chops or make fun of us, whatever you want to do. You can dial in at 1-888-429-5471. Do we want to talk a little bit now about the cell phone thingies there?
Yeah, we could chat about the cell phone. And actually, you know, what I'd like to do is have a little discussion about this. If anybody wants to call in or just you guys here. Cell phones... in the paranormal, why is there such a stigmatism around it? Pete, what's your thought on that?
Back in the archaic days of the investigating of the paranormal, the old flip-type cell phones, they seem to set the equipment off quite rapidly and erratically and just all kinds of weird things.
Vince, how about you? Any thoughts about cell phones and the paranormal?
Not really. I just know not to leave my mind while investigating. I've had a few false positives because of that.
That's right.
Plus all the ladies calling.
Actually, because of all the different radio waves that cell phones both give off and receive, a lot of those can actually interfere, false positives, as Vince said, with the equipment that we use, especially the EMF detectors. You could get some residual static and patterned hums on the audio recorders. However, we've met a few groups that investigate using just their cell phones, and I always thought that was a very unique and interesting approach. They do it for a couple reasons. Number one, smartphones have apps. We all know and love apps, and the apps that a lot of these people use are seismometers. They measure vibrations. There are EMF readers that, you know, use the internal phone sensors to read some type of ambient electromagnetic field. Some cell phones have thermometers built into them so they can tell the temperature. And, of course, pretty much all cell phones have audio recorders built into them for EVP use. So, I mean, that's their motivation for using cell phones. It seems that one device would cover 5, 6, 7 traditional devices.
Multitask.
Yeah, but the problem is that even when you put the phone into airplane mode, there's still a lot of issues, you know, with regard to the fields that are coming in on the phone. So either you turn the phone off or you leave it in the car, or you have to have some kind of specially shielded cage to put the phone in, and a lot of people have said that that specialty cage can actually interfere with a lot of the signals that are being received on the, you know, the various instrumentation and sensors. And I mean, if you think about it, a cell phone, especially a smartphone, has no less than 7, 8, 9 different sensors on it that measure, you know, a whole range of different things, like I just said, from electromagnetic fields to the audio sensors to ambient light sensors. There's a lot going for them, but that electromagnetic interference, that's a big one detracting from cell phones.
Now, was that a Faraday cage you were talking
about?
Yeah,
the Faraday cage. That's what a lot of people put the cell phones into to, you know, try and see if they can actually block some of that signal. And while a Faraday cage does block signal from going into it, and it also blocks the signal from coming out of it, some people speculate also that there are a lot of signals that are being distorted or just not received at all because of that Faraday cage.
And the same principle. We do use one of those with the Frank's box to get rid of a lot of that annoying static. And
we do.
Oh, it's so much easier on the ears.
But now, let me tell you a little bit about smartphones. We did an article about this for a magazine last year, I believe. And speaking of some of those sensors that are in it, and here's a little list. Accelerometers, light sensors, proximity sensors, temperature sensors, gyroscopes, sound sensors, pressure sensors, magnetic sensors, tilt sensors, and many more. So, I mean, just by virtue of the fact that one device has so many built-in capabilities, it seems reasonable that a lot of people might think about using cell phones in investigations.
You left out Ghost Radar and the Hololens.
Well, those are the apps. And the apps are great, because the apps are what actually drive all of those different sensors. And, you know, if you... If any of you have a smartphone and you go to the App Store, I mean, there's apps out there for paranormal investigating that are just absolutely ridiculous, absolutely ludicrous. I always tell about the one time that a lady came up to us at a public event, and she was visibly shaken. She had her smartphone in her hand, and she said, "I don't know what's going on. I'm being followed. I don't know what I did to provoke these things, but can you help me?" And she showed me her smartphone, and she had that Ghost Radar app, you know, the one that it puts up the random little color dots and
ping,
yeah, the random ping. Little pings. So I spent a couple moments explaining to her what was going on, and you know, after doing so, she felt a little bit more relieved that there wasn't actually things following her, or at least things that her smartphone said was following her.
Although that was at the Halbert House, and something may have been
it may have been following her.
Just keep that in mind for later when we talk about
Halbert
House.
That's a shameless plug, Pete. But let me spend a minute on the practical applications of cell phones. I mean, there's a lot of sensors in these things, and these sensors do read a lot of the same ranges of environmental phenomena that our typical paranormal equipment reads. So there is some merit in exploring them. But if you're going to explore these sensors, please do it in their raw form. Don't use the Ghost Radar app. Don't use any of that stuff. Go on to the App Store for whatever service you have and type in sensor. There's hundreds of applications out there that will let you view all the readouts from your smartphone sensors on the screen. So if there's any temperature fluctuations, if you're smartphone has a thermometer, you'll be able to see it right on the screen. Likewise, if you have, everybody has a magnetometer in their phone. That's one of the things that helps to make the digital compass work. That receives electromagnetic fields, so you'll be able to see the variations in the EMF fields around you. Same thing with ambient light sensors. You could view the direct data right from there. So there is a lot of merit in exploring smartphone technology in the paranormal, but you have to go about it in an intelligent manner. You have to realize that a lot of these apps that are out there are built for entertainment purposes only. They're not built for the seasoned professional investigator. They're built for entertainment. So you guys out there being smart, being informed, being logical, scientific people, do yourself a favor. If you're going to use the smartphones for this field, check out raw sensor data. If you just type in sensor in the App Store, you'll find a lot of what I'm talking about. Now, the second really interesting thing about modern smartphones is that they have these things called backpacks. And if you have a relatively new smartphone or one of the really popular ones, you could go to Google and you could type in your phone brand and then the word backpack. So, for example, iPhone backpack. And what a backpack is, it's a little electronic device that your phone slides into, or the device slides onto your phone, and it extends the capabilities of your smartphone. Smartphones are very powerful. They're small little computers that do an amazing amount of processing. In particular, people are always talking about thermal imaging cameras. And thermal imaging cameras are very expensive. They're costly. They're delicate.
But they are cool.
They are very cool, absolutely. But there is actually a non-contact MEMS thermal sensor that's a backpack for smartphones. In fact, the one that I'm speaking of, if you have Google, you could type in Omron, O-M-R-O-N, D6T. And what this is it's a little thermal camera that straps onto the back of your cell phone, and it overlays a thermal image on top of a video image that your cell phone captures. It's a pretty amazing little device. And I mean, that's a very, very fancy backpack. But there's a lot of backpacks that do other things, such as high-quality digital audio recording and various other sensors that enable you to extend the capabilities of the smartphone.
I have seen a few investigators actually use that in the field in a pinch when stuff is happening. They get their smartphone recorder recording so something is recording.
There's a lot of times in the field that batteries will just randomly die. And if you're doing an EVP session and suddenly your audio recorder dies, well, you know, what option do you have? A cell phone? It is.
I mean, I do know toying around with my own smartphone. I won't say what brand it is because, you know, I'm simple, so that should pretty much narrow it down for anybody out there. But when I use the camera on there, no matter where I take pictures, it puts halos on things.
Mm.
Or it puts in our old buddy,
the orb.
The orb. And I don't know how many people have showed me pictures of the orb.
Yeah, especially taken on smartphones.
Actually, do you remember that weird one I showed you? We'll post it on our Facebook page later again. The one from Gettysburg with...
Yes.
Where it completely erased the car but just left the headlights and taillights?
Yeah, that was unique. That was weird. And that was one of your first cell phone pictures from that particular simple smartphone that you have.
That and me pushing the spirit back into the house because it left two rings on the photo.
Yeah, that's a memorable night. We spent 2.5 hours looking for an orb. Thanks, Pete.
You know, it was October, it was raining, it's cold. What can I tell you? Ghost hunting is a passion.
That's right. Well, I mean, just to wrap it up here, guys, I think the bottom line here is that you have to be very careful when you have a cell phone in a location that you're investigating if you have a lot of equipment laid out, because those fields that the phone emanates and receives will trigger all sorts of havoc on the devices. I mean, we've seen where motion sensors that we have set up will be triggered by stray communications. The cell phones trigger them, the walkie-talkies trigger them. Those are weird. It's crazy the way it happens. So these devices really do interact with the typical traditional devices that we use for investigating. But having said that, if you're going to use a cell phone, do your due diligence. Check out the apps that show you the direct sensor data. Go on Google, type in your phone manufacturer, and type in the word backpack, and see if there's any interesting equipment that's out there that's compatible with your phone that might help you to extend your investigating possibilities.
So basically, just to recap, like somebody like me with an IceCube head, a cell phone is a radio. When we use it, we're opening a radio frequency, similar to a walkie-talkie. Is that a good similarity?
Absolutely. It's pretty
close.
So
keep that in mind, too, with walkie-talkies. We've had... I do remember the first time we got the new walkie-talkies, and all the motion sensors went off. And we're like, oh my God, something's there!
Well, we thought we opened up the vortex of the seventh layer of hell that night, but it was just our walkie-talkies.
Live and learn.
That's right.
Again, the phone lines are open in the United States and that place they call Canada. Give us a call at 1-888-429-5471.
What am I supposed to have thought of us,
Manatee? Oh boy, this can only mean a religious discussion coming up.
Oh, you know, I can't.
Why is my stomach queasy already?
I don't know, my son. What do you have to hide? Perhaps we should call the Vatican.
The Vatican. We always try and keep everything that we do religiously neutral. But, I mean, when you talk about the paranormal, there's a lot of times that you have to talk about religion.
And really, the Vatican is probably the organization that the father of paranormal investigating, but nobody gives credit where credit's due.
Right.
Again, forgive me, I think it's called the Congregation for... Oh, it just changed its name. But they're the group that goes out there and investigates miracles to prove that miracles did happen to move a person along onto sainthood or to deny. And they go through a rigorous screening process. I mean, you want to talk about scientific.
Yeah.
I mean, they do medical, psychological. They do the site, the geology, everything related to... I guess we should take a note from that.
Scientific priests.
But then there's the theological point. That's where I'm sure Vinny's going to rip us a new one here tonight. But of course, Davey and I grew up in a predominantly Catholic family. I mean,
same with me.
Oh, more to confess later on. Hell it is. No. No, but really, we, with the new Pope in there, and actually, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, they caught Pope Francis doing an exorcism during Sunday Mass at St. Peter's Square. I don't know if you've
really
seen that video yet.
No, I didn't see that.
It was, I believe it was a handicapped Mexican male. He went over there and one of the bishops motioned to him, and the next thing you know, he had his hands on him doing rigorous prayer. The guy started shaking.
Holy cow.
Apparently he released 2 or 3 demons out of him. So, I mean, that... Maybe the poor person sitting next to him, you know, all they wanted to do was get the Pope's autograph, get a picture with the old Francis, you know.
I'm not laughing at the exorcism, I'm laughing at the way that Pete said that he let go 2 or 3 demons. I'm thinking about Pete letting go 2 or 3 farts every now and then, and the poor people sitting next to him at the events where it happens. I'm sorry.
We call that ionic.
Okay.
Oh, but Father Amroth, the chief exorcist for the Roman Catholic Church.
Very famous.
I guess the article I read, he said he's done over 160,000 exorcisms in his 28-year career. That's like 15, 16 exorcisms a day.
That's amazing.
He's like the Will Chamberlain of the Vatican.
They're going to retire his cross when he decides to move out.
Oh, seriously.
But one of the unique things, he's calling on the new Pope to back off of hundreds and hundreds of years of tradition, saying that Satan is running rampant and that they need to take away the process of having bishops actually approve an exorcism and just start letting parish priests do exorcisms. I don't know how I actually really feel about that.
I'm not a big fan of that approach. I mean, a lot of the draw to the Catholic faith, I guess you could say, the draw is in their traditions and their rigors and their very stoic procedures about how they go about doing things, and especially for an exorcism. I mean, that's something that's just so out there for many people that to just make it so everyday in local parishes. I mean, that, I don't know, that strikes me as very odd.
I mean, that's almost like our government hiding the UFO conspiracy. I mean, they've kept the process of exorcism locked up for many centuries.
Yeah.
So there's probably a reason for it. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to see one or have to do one.
No. No, and we've seen actual videos of exorcisms being done, and talk about a disturbing process. Holy cow.
But the one Vince is really getting ready to jump in was later in the article, Mr. Father Amroth there made the comment that, what was it, yoga is evil, as is Harry Potter.
What? Okay, go
and
ahead.
I think you said pretty much any Eastern religion is evil, too. So I think he overstepped his bounds a bit there. Especially, how can you attack yoga?
I'm thinking Harry Potter. How do you attack Harry Potter?
Well, personally, I can see that, but I can't stand that little kid.
Oh, I love Harry Potter.
Is it the glasses? Is it the glasses?
It could be.
Well, basically, the premise of what he said was that any study of Eastern religions, the Asian religions, have a false belief in reincarnation. So, I mean, I guess that's a shot across the bow again at New Age and...
Yeah.
But aren't there hints of reincarnation in the Bible itself?
Well, there's that little Jesus guy, right?
The whole life after death thing, I guess, you know, that's a nod at reincarnation.
Just a little one. Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, I think he overstepped his bounds with this and attacked something he should... didn't necessarily need to attack, and is he trying to start a holy war now or something? Or?
I mean, it's very odd to me that him, Father Amroth, who's been doing this for like 60 years, is the one advocating that it just be opened up to the masses. Either, you know, he's getting tired of doing it himself, a little bit overwhelmed, or, I mean, I can't even think of an alternative there.
Mamma mia, I gotta go to the back room. I got two more to go. Oh, no. That one just brought me an extra 10,000 years. I'm sorry. Purgatory.
Oh, goodness.
And then they went on to say, I mean, Benedict actually in his career wasn't rumored to have done any exorcisms. Pope John Paul II did several. And I guess they still use his name in exorcisms, which is powerful. And there was one he was describing where the person actually started foaming at the mouth and got really violent. But
that's weird.
Anybody who knows me and I see chocolate cake and I can't have it, I pretty much have the same reaction.
That is true. That is true. It doesn't necessarily have to be demonic.
Okay, but does the Catholic Church have their own system? Or do they pretty much take an archaic system and put their own twist to it?
I think they use their own Catholic system that they've been using for probably thousands of years.
Pretty much every religion has their own form of expulsion of demons or evil spirits. I mean, from shamans or even like Deep South Paranormal with the gree-gree sticks. And I mean, exorcism has always just been shrouded in mystery. It's just that mystique, that scary movie of the girl walking on her back down the stairs.
Yeah.
Getting puked on with some nasty green stuff.
You know, though, it is interesting to note that the whole exorcism, the topic of exorcism, is covered by pretty much every known religion in the history of the written language. There's always been some form of acknowledgement of a negative demonic force out there, and some procedural method to free a person who's ensnared by that force. And I find that very unique, especially since some of these religions are so far flung across the globe that never had any contact with anybody else ever. And yet there's so many similarities.
I know, I'm just stuck on the yoga thing. I mean, maybe it's the tight gym pants and the ladies bending over, they tend to your thoughts.
Perhaps if they're little boys in yoga pants, you can appreciate them more.
Oh, dear.
We touched a raw subject.
My apologies, Vincent.
Let's not pick on little Harry Potter and his wand.
No, don't pick on Harry Potter. I love Harry Potter. If I were a little boy wizard, I would go to Hogwarts in a heartbeat.
I mean, again, not to cross those controversial subjects, but I mean, even the church with a lot of good religious movies, they always come down in condemnation where they should actually support them. I mean, one of my favorite that always made me think, whether it's plausible or not, was The Last Temptation of Christ.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know if anybody knows this or if they've seen the movie. I know it's a bit dated, late 70s, was it? With William Dafoe playing Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know the ending scene right at the crucifixion. Spoiler alert, he does get crucified.
I think it was in the 80s.
There, as soon as he dies on the cross, it looks like the film starts to burn. I guess actually during the film actually burned in the canister at the moment they filmed his death. And I can't think of the author's name. It's beginning to be a problem. I can't think of it.
That's crazy.
Something Russian.
Oh, yeah.
Was a Greek author there. But he's like, I have to leave that in because that in itself was, dare I say, paranormal.
That's amazing. That's a very unique approach.
So if nothing else, go home, rent it, watch it. It's a good movie.
And you could see the film burning.
Now you know where the Da Vinci Code came from.
Boy. Yeah, I mean, it's a clandestine organization, the Catholic faith. There's a lot of clandestine organizations, the government, for one. And anytime you have...
The Illuminati.
Anytime you have a clandestine organization that has a mission, you always have to you always have to be very, not concerned, but very aware that there's probably something else going on there that they either don't want you to know or that... You know, we're not deemed worthy of knowing.
That's always my thing. It's like, there's certain things we don't need to know, and I know better, and I don't ask those questions, because I really don't want to know the answer, even though I'm pretty sure I know what the answer
is.
Yeah,
yeah.
Is that music playing the whole time?
So, Rich, what do you think about that whole discussion?
Oh, that's right.
He's sitting by the pool having
Rich
margarita.
Isn't here. Rich.
There's going to be hell to pay. No, not literally, but I hope he brings us back cool souvenirs.
Some warm weather would be nice, gosh.
One of those lollipops with a scorpion.
Oh, no, thank you. No.
You've seen them now at the gas stations? I mean, worms in there?
Your beer sugar with a bug inside it? My gosh.
I mean, I could understand putting chocolate inside of candy, but...
Yeah. Well, I think we're at the point where we should start talking about our event that's coming up, the Hulbert House in Boonville, New York, with John Zaffis. Pete, what's the date on that?
Well, it's going to be a whole weekend of fun.
HulbertCon.
Starting on June 28th. You're going to have a special meet and greet with the Godfather himself, John Zaffis, star of Sci-Fi's Haunted Collector. John has agreed to come up and do a special performance for us. He's going to probably do that little dancing thing he did at Gettysburg.
John's a great guy.
Yes. There's going to be a meet and greet with him that's followed by a party, which is going to be DJed by... Uranus Capone, a.k.a. Vincent.
Looking forward to it. Please send any requests to me beforehand.
Just keep the selections before 1812, because the Hulbert House was built in 1812.
That's right.
Saturday is going to be a fun-filled day. We're going to have lectures, but not the kind of lectures where you fall asleep. They're going to be hands-on training. Dr. David's going to have some kind of technology type of thing.
Yes, some kind of thing. Yep.
I'll give a quick one on technique and historical review. John Zaffis is going to be doing one on advanced demonology and ghost hunting. And that's going to be followed by a lot of food in between, breakfast, lunch, and then a dinner with the Godfather.
And us.
And we might tell a few spooky stories.
We love telling spooky stories.
We want to make you poop that food out you just ate, so we're going to make sure they're really
scary.
Scare
the poop out of you.
And then he's going to talk again. probably about the paranormal stuff. And then what everybody wants to do, tear into the halberd with an investigation from the basement to the attic. Except you don't want to go in the attic because there's really no way in there. But
that attic is terrible. That is filled with pigeon crap. I mean, like, piles 2 feet high. What a smell up there.
Oh, that was the pigeons? I thought that was me.
No, that was the pigeons.
You know, I do sweat a little bit in the summertime.
Yeah.
And then Sunday we're going to wrap it up with the pancake breakfast, a live evidence review.
Mm.
I should point out, I believe we have about 12 vendors that'll be selling various wares. A couple of ladies doing Reiki massage. We might have a psychic or two. I don't know yet. I haven't felt their presence. And jewelry and some other items. That in itself will be open to the public. If you are free to investigate, there will be tickets available just for the lecture. And if you really want to brave it, I think there's only one left, but you can actually get a room at the Halberd House for the entire 3-day event.
You can investigate there, and you can stay there. That's amazing.
And you'll get food and all that other fun stuff.
Now, we have a few levels of tickets, Pete, don't we? Why don't you talk about the three levels, and I think we have a special level for a limited time.
We have the golden ticket. Who's got the golden ticket out there? Those are limited to strictly 8 of them. Why? Because there's 8 rooms at the Halberd House. The golden ticket includes lodging, food, and all of the fun stuff we mentioned. Then we have the VIP ticket, which is all 3 days, all the events we listed. Plus, they also include preferred seating. And those are... I probably should tell prices.
Mm-hmm,
too, huh?
Mm-hmm.
The golden ticket is $245 per person.
And that includes the room.
Yes. The VIP tickets for the 3-day event are $135. I believe Rich just added a Saturday-only VIP pass. I believe that was $99
right.
He's running
yep.
for limited time. And there'll be $18 general admission tickets, which are on sale now for $15.
Okay, now...
But I should point out, we sold out last year at 125 people, and we didn't have the golden level.
Right.
But this year, we cut the event down much smaller. We're only limiting it to the 8 golden tickets and 45 VIP tickets.
So if you want your tickets, you have to act quickly.
So what that means, we had 125 people investigating last year. If you were one of them, imagine 1/3 of that there now. Stuff happened with that many people.
Yeah.
How much more stuff will you actually see now with
yep.
a smaller group?
Exactly.
4 floors, 40 people, it's going to be a lot more targeted.
Now, let me just point out that I've been receiving a few emails, and people are confused about the difference between a couple of these tickets. First, the difference between the VIP ticket and the golden ticket. It's a $110 difference, so that much is clear. But the only difference between the VIP and the golden ticket is that when you buy a VIP ticket, you do not get lodging at the Halberd House. However, there are hotels nearby.
A few bed and breakfasts, too.
Bed and breakfasts, so there are options to stay nearby if you are coming from afar. And, you know, in the past, the people that have come from afar have been very, very nicely surprised by the activity that happens at the Halberd House. Now, the second question is, what is the difference between the VIP ticket and this new Saturday-only pass? And the biggest difference is that the VIP ticket is $135, and the Saturday-only ticket is $99. The Saturday ticket only gets you into the activities from Saturday morning through Saturday evening, whereas the VIP ticket still covers all 3 days. So for the extra $35, $36, you're getting 3 days worth of activities instead of just 1 day on Saturday. However, we do know that a lot of people can't make it for the 3 days and they're only going to be in town for 1 day, so we wanted to make sure that everybody had the opportunity to jump in and, you know, have some fun with us.
And if you want to brave it for the 3 days, I'm sure you're going to be more than delighted.
Absolutely. And just so people know, the general admission ticket, which is now on sale for $15, that includes a meet and greet with John Zaffis and the Rome Investigators of the Paranormal on Saturday. And that also includes admission to John's lecture on Saturday.
So when you see John, make sure you run into room, scream, and say, "Oh my God, you're John Zaffis," and throw yourself on the ground.
He loves that.
But we should perhaps also point out that it's going to be fun.
It's always a good time. Anytime John Zaffis is somewhere, it's a good time. And anytime we're someplace, too. I mean, we're a pretty fun group of people.
And if you're advanced or exceptional beginners, you are allowed to bring your own equipment.
Yep.
Actually, we would prefer that because that allows us to spread our stuff around a little bit more. I believe we're going to have all 16 cameras up and running for the event.
Right, 16 DVR cameras.
A couple two-treated thermals.
The thermals are going to be up and running.
A lot of audio, and that'll be pretty much what we do Sunday, going through a lot of that footage.
Yeah.
People who want to share with us what you found.
And if people are interested in tickets, you can buy them at our website, RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com, or you could Google our Facebook page, Rome Investigators of the Paranormal. We have our own site there. You could purchase tickets online through both of those locations, or you could send us an email to info@RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com.
And I will point this out. I mean, we know it's upstate New York. We know times are rough for a lot of people. We do have a payment plan out there available if you want to do that in two payments yourself.
We want to make sure everybody has a good time and everybody's able to come and do it with us.
And that's the one good thing. If you want a payment option, get in touch with Rich, and he'll make sure you can enjoy the fun.
Right. Now, it's worthwhile to say that at this event, we're going to have our own booth set up, Pete, right?
I guess we can have something.
Yeah, we're going to have our own booth set up, and we're going to be offering some of our books up for sale. And, we're not leaving yet.
Who was that?
Jeepers, that's a voice from beyond.
Benny!
I was standing right here.
So, we're going to be offering some of our books up for sale, and, a bunch of our other merchandise as well. And we do actually have a new book that's coming out in about 3 weeks. And this one is called The Logbook of UFO Activity. This is a second book in our three-book set of logbooks. The third one will be released in the fall of the year.
And that one's called You Believe This Crap?
That's not what it's called. It's called The Logbook of Cryptid Activity.
Oh, geez, I just cryptid in my pants. Very exciting. I mean, it's always refreshing to do these books, to realize how much you do know and then some stuff that you had no clue of, and it's a good learning experience.
Not to mention that a lot of these logbooks are, we're doing them at the request of people who actually use these logbooks.
Yes, actually, two weeks ago, we did the investigation, a reinvestigation of a home. We went back there, and out came the logbook, and this is what happened since you left. Bing, 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 bing.
That's awesome. It's beautiful.
And I didn't think they would use it.
And they did. They did. And, likewise with the UFO activity, you know, if people are deeply entrenched in one area of the paranormal, such as spirits and ghosts and hauntings, they may, you know, jokingly laugh off other areas such as UFOs or cryptids. But, you know, if you're in the paranormal field, you have to kind of be receptive to everything that might be paranormal, and UFOs are definitely out of the normal, and that's paranormal to us.
Some investigators even say that the two of them often go hand in hand. There's this house not far from here that had a lot of activity, and they also noticed strange lights coming to the sky, coming from the house. It's probably about a half hour away from us here.
That's unique. That's unique. Yeah, the logbook of UFO activity was a project that was actually sparked by somebody who said, "I wish there was something that I could bring with me when I go sky watching."
Bingo.
So that's where we started that one from. And just because of our own interest in the cryptozoology field, that's where we got the idea for the logbook of cryptid activity.
You like rats, you like roaches, you like bugs of all descriptions.
That's not the cryptids we're talking about. We're talking about, like, the Mothman and Bigfoot, Nessie, Champ, you know.
Porky Pig.
Porky Pig.
The back hair on Pete.
Pete's back hair.
Well, that does make me a cryptozoological oddity, I guess.
I guess.
Can I give one more quick selfish plug?
Yeah, please.
Again, June 28th through 30th, Boonville, New York, Central New York.
HolbertCon.
HolbertCon with John Zephyrs.
RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com is the website, and tickets are available for sale.
How do I put this? The last event at the Hulbert House was very eventful. I mean, that door slammed in Rich's face again.
That door always slams.
But the first time we investigated the Hulbert all those years ago was one of the creepiest EVPs I've ever heard, and it was that Class A EVP of that little girl.
Screaming, help me.
That just sends a chill down your spine. As you know, we several members of RIP went to another group's event over the weekend at the Rucker Mansions.
Rucker Mansions in Utica, New York.
Hats off to them. That was a really well-planned-out event. We had a good time. Right off the bat, I mean, I was touched literally no more than five times, and I'm not, like, talking like a teary movie with... I mean, my pants got tugged a good five, six times, and I felt something physically pass through me. And it wasn't mold. No, I'm sorry.
Moe's is a local taco burrito restaurant, by the way.
Very interesting. I can't wait to listen to the audio with that. And that's an afterthought of your discussion on phone apps and so on.
Right.
Diane was actually using the Ovilus because I forgot to bring the Frank's box.
The app, the Ovilus app on her cell phone.
And it makes you wonder how that actually works or what it's doing. She turned it on and left it on the ground. And then, all of a sudden, it just said, evil. Then it said something like, chocolate cake. Then it said, man. Then it just kept saying the letter G. G. G.
So there was an evil G. Chocolate cake man who had the first name.
Could be a Mason.
Could be what?
Could be a Mason with a G.
Oh, could be.
But yeah... I've seen that firsthand. And then she put it on phonetic, and that was even stranger than the dictionary of words that it was pulling out.
Yeah, I did that review on the Ovilus a couple weeks ago, and in between that time, I played around with an Ovilus, and I don't know if the one that I had was defective or what the deal was, but it was very predictably repeating the same words over and over again that were not in context to anything in all the different modes.
The greatest part of the night was when this couple wanted basically to see something. They didn't see anything all night, and I couldn't resist myself. I'm like, do you want to see something scary? And they all got quiet, and they started looking at me, and then I just screamed. They jumped like 5 feet in the air. That's not funny!
That was awesome.
I thought it was funny.
Jeez. But the mansions were really good looking?
Absolutely. I'd love to get in there and do a real investigation with the team and maybe the other team that was hosting it. Nonstop activity from the minute we were in there. I mean, we really didn't have to... I don't want to use the word provoke, but I mean, activity was just happening. It's there.
If anybody has any ideas for investigations or any cool places that they've been to, feel free to go to our website, RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com or... ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com. We'd love to hear from you.
We are available for weddings, parties, birthday parties, children's parties, bag parties, and we do pimp Vince out if we have new equipment to buy.
That's great.
Wow, can you believe another show has gone by?
We want to thank everybody for listening tonight, and Vince, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me on.
It was great to have you. And, catch us again in 2 weeks. We'll have a lot more news and information and some event updates.
But before we go, can you just recap again where they can buy tickets for HolbertCon? You really want to get those, folks.
You betcha. They're selling out fast. RomeInvestigatorsOfTheParanormal.com or go to our Facebook page. You could search Facebook and Rome Investigators of the Paranormal on Google.
Again, David, do you want to tell them where they can...
No, I think we're good.
All right, I'm Peter Leonard, and it's been a pleasure being here tonight.
Dr. Dave, signing out. Thank you for joining us.
Good night.